Our first month, we sold 65 cars. 30 days into it, I knew I didn't want to do anything else for the rest of my life.
Why is that?
Because I made more money in that month than I would make usually in a year.
Can you really lose money on every car but still make money on every deal? For this dealer, it's not just a bad dream. It's in his business plan, and it's very profitable. Today, I'm speaking with Ali Hanna, dealer principal for Hanna Cars, a 3-store independent dealer group. We discuss selling his first car behind a service center at 30 years old, how he runs his $200 million a year used car business in 2 states, can his newest acquisition succeed where others have failed before him, and much more. What's up, everyone? This is Car Dealership Guy. You're listening to the Car Dealership Guy podcast, which is my effort to give you access to the most transparent insights into the car market. Well, before we get into the show, this episode is brought to you by my very own Car Dealership Guy industry job board. I hear it every day. CDG, why aren't you charging money for this? My answer? Because I can. CDGjobs.com, my industry job board connecting the best talent in automotive with the best companies, will remain absolutely free for CDG listeners to post and fill available roles at their companies. This free job board is for anyone in automotive, vendors, dealers, lenders, manufacturers, auto tech, everyone. Already, over 100 companies have posted open positions, including Lithia Motors, Recurrent, Credit Acceptance, Viros Credit, Cars Commerce, Shift Digital, Plug, Fullpath, Westlake, Trade Pending. You get the point. The best part is that when these companies hire through cdgjobs.com, they are hiring the most informed candidates in the marketplace. So don't hesitate. You can add your open roles today by visiting cdgjobs.com or clicking the link in the show notes below. That's cdgjobs.com. Ali Hanna on the CDG podcast. Ali, welcome.
Thank you, Yossi. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I'm excited because you told me it's the first podcast you've ever done. That's number one. Number two, I'm excited because you're a used car guy, and it's been a minute since we had a, you know, good old used car guy on the podcast telling how it is. So I'm pumped for this. I want to get started with really your upbringing in this business, how you even got started with Hanna Imports. Give us some of the background.
I'll give you all the background. Actually, I'm from Lebanon. I grew up in Beirut. Moved here when I was almost 18 to go to NC State University, and never had any intention to be in the car business whatsoever. Went to NC State for an engineering degree, and out of college, I moved to New York City and got a job in engineering field. I was there for almost 6 years. I was there during September 11, actually. I was in New York City, and I never really fell in love with the engineering business, and I always knew at some point I would find something else to do. So I moved back to North Carolina and looked for a different field, and I stumbled into the car business. I didn't work in the car business until I was 30 years old, and I'm 47 now.
So tell me more about that, right? Like when you say stumbled, so you moved back to North Carolina, what does that mean to you? Did you just start flipping cars or what really happened?
I started going with a friend of mine to the auction when I had extra time on my hand. I would buy a car, then I would buy 2 cars. I would put them at somebody else's lot. And at some point, I had 10 or 15 cars, and I quit my job. And I started selling behind a service shop. I would actually do paperwork on the back of a car. Did that for a while, almost a year, like worked from the streets. And I opened my store in 2009. I always remember that. The day I opened, I had 40 cars in inventory, and our first month, we sold 65 cars. And 30 days into it, I knew I didn't want to do anything else for the rest of my life.
Why is that?
Because I made more money in that month than I would make usually in a year.
My man, keeping it real. So now tell us more about that. You came from, and just so I understand, when you say, what was your job? You say, when I quit my job, what was that job?
I was a bridge engineer.
So I feel like, you know, hearing that, it's like you sound to me like someone that had options. And I think that's a testament to the opportunity in this industry, because typically, in many cases, people that get into the business don't have options. And the car business, you know, low barriers to entry. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity that way if you're willing to grind. But you had options. And so what was it for you that really kind of sucked you in? Was it really the opportunity for the American dream, financial success? What was that for you?
One day kind of made me want to decide to do this. I was driving from the auction And that's before I had my own car lot. And I had maybe 7 or 8 cars parked behind a service shop. And I used to buy single ads on AutoTrader and cars.com. And anytime, you know, these ads expired, I kept them active. I kept them active even though I had sold the car. So my phone would ring all day. It would not stop ringing because I will have 7 cars in inventory, but 70 cars advertised. So one day I was driving from the auction and my phone kept ringing nonstop on 7 cars. I told everybody to meet me there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I get there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I have 10 people wait for me. I sold all 7 cars. and then I knew I can make a living doing this.
I love to hear it. That's incredible. Tell me about when you launched. You say you launched with 40 cars. How did you do that? And because the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, did you own all those cars outright? Did you floor plan? It's hard enough to launch your first, you know, car lot. How did you launch with 40 cars?
And I'm talking about 40 cars. At the time, my average car was under $10,000. And they were all cheap cars. And before I opened my car lot, you know, I started with 7, 8 cars and it went to 15 and I went to 20. And I, you know, I knew I needed at least 30, 40 cars to open a place. So I didn't want to open a place before I had that. And I invested all my profit and all my savings in it. I mean, from the previous 7, 8 years. So I put it all on the line. I even borrowed on credit cards. I, you know, that was all of it. That 40 cars was everything I owned.
What was it like with just thinking through? I'm sure you had kind of family in the picture, right? You're reinvesting everything in the business. You know,
I was single at the time. There's no family. And I remember telling my mom and dad that I want to quit my engineering and be a car dealer. And they were like, please don't do that. Please. My dad thought it would be embarrassing, actually, to tell his friends that his son is a car dealer.
Oh, my God. And what do they think now?
Oh, they're very proud.
So I want to take a step back. Give us a lay of the land for a second of your business today, right? 3 locations is what I read online, and I'm sure you can tell us more about that. But just tell us, like, high level, like, how many units are you selling per year? Give us, like, a lay of the land.
So our main store is in Raleigh. We currently have about 600 cars on the ground on that store, and we're pacing almost 300 cars sold in February. This will actually be our best February ever. We've never sold 300 cars in February.
What's driving that? Because especially at a time when lots of dealers are crying in the used market and you're saying your best February, like, tell me about that.
We doubled down on inventory is a short answer. We went from 400 cars to 600 cars in the last couple of months. And we doubled down on staff and we went all in. You know, ever since I started in this business, I've only had one setback, and that happened in 2022. After 21, you know, we all had our best year ever. Every car dealer had his best year ever. And things started to go backward in 2022. And the setback was mostly caused by me taking my foot off the pedal. I started being less aggressive. I was concerned that wholesale market is going to keep on shifting downward at a fast pace. I shrunk my inventory. And I would say that's the biggest mistake I've ever made in this field. The only way to be successful in this business, in my opinion, is to operate without fear. You got to be aggressive at all times. The minute you take your foot off, things start sliding down. I'll never make that mistake again.
I can tell. You just opened up another store, a former off-lease only location, which we'll get into that shortly. I'm really curious about that. For anyone that doesn't know, and I'm sure most people do, off-lease, huge used car operation in Florida that went out of business recently, and you're capitalizing on that real estate, which I think is genius. So talking more about a little bit about the numbers, how have you recently scaled from 400 to 600 units? Where are you acquiring these additional units?
In this particular case, we had a third store in North Carolina that we was a big store too. We had about 300 cars on the ground and we sold it. We got an offer. I got an offer that was really good offer and I thought it was a good idea to take. So we moved our inventory from that third store to the 2 other stores and we retained all 60 of our staff. So it was kind of how it happened.
Mm-hmm. But tell me about your actual inventory acquisition sources. Are you relying on auctions? Are you buying off the street? How are you getting this inventory?
We buy anywhere. We buy from every auction in this country. We buy Mannheim, ACV, Adesso. We buy from all the rental companies. We also buy from the public. So we think you should pursue all options. Especially, you know, in this store in Florida where we had to buy 500 cars in 4 weeks. So you do whatever you have to do.
A lot of people tell me that buying from the public, they want to do more of it, but logistically, it's just more work. And when you're very under-resourced, low staff, it's tough to do for the small guys, right? I'm not referring to the big companies. How have you been able to scale up your buy from public operations?
It is tough, and it's gotten tougher over the last year or so because a lot of people are upside down. And, you know, that makes it more difficult. And plus, there's a lot of competition. We're talking CarMax, Carvana of the world. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. You have to be fully committed and you have to hire dedicated staff. It's not a side job.
Got it. So you have dedicated staff just from buying cars off the street or just total acquisition?
So we have two people in this, in our Florida store that do nothing but chase outside leads for, you know, buying from the public.
Tell me more about your business model. Give us the full lay of the land. Are you completely vertically integrated? Meaning, do you have reconditioning in-house, transportation in-house? Do you outsource that stuff? How do you do all that?
We do all of our own reconditioning. We don't sublet anything on recon. But no, we don't do our own transportation. So we're mostly vertically integrated, I would say. Yeah, we have our own service department. We have our own, you know, detail department. We have, except here in Florida, actually, because we're new.
And then, so when it comes to reconditioning, how do you operate that? Like, are you doing it in centralized warehouses like Carvana style, or do you do it in, you know, every single store on a smaller scale? And I'm also curious to know, what are you spending per reconditioning per vehicle?
So we spend about $800 a car in Florida right now. The metrics for us is time to line. We like that to be 7 to 8 days. And we like it to be about $800. We don't buy a lot of rough cars. So usually we, you know, if a car doesn't make the cut, we wholesale it. Because that will slow down the reconditioning process and will affect aging. And we try to avoid that. And the reason why we're here, actually, is that we think the facility was tailor-made for our needs. 16 acres, you know, we can put maybe 1,500 cars on the ground if we need to. We got a 24,000 square foot service building that is separate from our retail building on the same property. So it was beautifully laid out for volume. We think we can get to 500 or 600 cars a month here in the future.
Wow. That's incredible. So who are you selling to? Like, who's your target market?
Our average selling price is usually about $30,000. So a lot of people fall under that category, I think. You know, the average selling price nationwide is, what, $27,000 these days? So we're usually between $27,000 and $30,000.
Mm-hmm. What's your percentage of subprime business, do you think?
Probably 20%.
Wow, that's a lot lower than I expected.
That we're not really geared. We never really target subprime, but we take what we can get.
So when you say you don't target subprime, and if you're going upstream, I'm going to have to assume you're operating on a pretty low gross margin per vehicle. What's your gross profit per vehicle right now?
It's negative on the front end.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's part of the plan, actually.
Wow. So you're operating a very aggressive model.
Mm-hmm. We think it's a volume game, and when you can sell a lot of cars, you don't have to make any money on the front.
So you're relying strictly on the back end.
Well, there is a back end. There is a dock fee too.
Mm-hmm. And in Florida, what's the dock fee in Florida?
Ours is $998.
And then what's your average back end per vehicle, or, like, you know, products, warranties, gap insurance? What are you selling that? What's your profit on that?
In North Carolina, it's about $2,500. Here, we're not there yet because we just opened 3.5 weeks.
Interesting. So, you know, this kind of reminds me of, by the way, very different model from what I'm accustomed to and used to. You know, as we were growing our independent store, we were very much more a gross store, as you'd call it, where on the actual vehicle, we were making, you know, a couple grand, you know, really depending on the customer, but obviously lower volume than this. I mean, we weren't doing, you know, 300 cars a month. So it doesn't shock me. I mean, you're taking an aggressive model. Kind of reminds me of Echo Park, how they've really scaled by offering very, very low front end on the actual vehicle and relying all on the back end. Have you operated this model in your North Carolina store for this entire time, all these years, or is this a new model for you?
Well, it's the same model, but our front end has been going down year after year. So we used to make $1,000, then it was $800, then it's $500, and zero, and now we're in the negative. But that's always been the target, is to maximize volume and not focus on front end profit.
On a consolidated basis, you are profitable, right?
Oh, we're very profitable.
And then tell me about financing the company. Have you financed everything yourself? Like, do you have any investors? How did you even get to this point?
So my first store, it was, you know, an acre land. I was renting it for $4,000 a month. And I was there for 5 years before I moved into that current Raleigh store. And, you know, I got lucky, actually. You know, the right property became available at the right time. And I went and bought it and got 100% financing from the bank. I don't have any investors. I don't have any partners.
And so today, when you think about just your outlook for this year, how are you preparing for the market? What's your outlook for, you know, just like economic headwinds? Where is the customer going to be? Like, if I was a fly on the wall today in your executive team meeting, what are you and your top leadership talking about?
I feel like the economy in general has been more resilient than we all expected. And the demand is still here for cars. I mean, I don't think it's going anywhere. I feel positive about this year. I feel like we can have a great year. There is demand despite the high interest rate. Despite the inventory challenges, I think if you execute, you can be very profitable this year.
You're an optimist. I love it. You know how the saying goes, right? Pessimists sound smart, optimists get rich. Tell me more about lending. How did you get lenders, right? Getting lenders as a young upstart, unproven per se in this business. And for anyone that doesn't know what I mean by getting lenders, I mean, you are a new dealer. You want to work with the best lenders in the country, right? People that will approve your client. I mean, the Allies, the Capital Ones, I mean, and many, many more names to add to the roster. It's just not easy. So how did you get your initial lenders?
I worked very hard at that. Actually, my first 4 years in the business, I had zero lenders and I wasn't doing any financing. It was one random day and an Ally rep walked into my office in a smaller store and he offered me Ally. I took it and it was my only lenders for the next couple of years. I was begging Cap One every day. I called them every day. I sent emails every day, and they finally said yes. And once you have these two, I think the door's open.
I couldn't agree more. Very similar story. Very similar story, and, you know, kind of humble beginnings, right? Chasing the lenders, because, I mean, everyone knows this. The lenders are your opportunity. No lenders, no business at scale.
My business model doesn't even work without any lenders. Especially with losing money in the front end.
I can imagine. Now, fast forward to today. What is it like for you with lending, specifically with the way the banks have tightened over the past year, where interest rates are at today? How is lending going for you? I mean, are you seeing that as a big issue with customers? You mentioned people underwater. What are you seeing there?
It's more challenging, for sure. So there is people who are more upside down than... There's nothing you can do for them. You know, they're $10,000 upside down and they don't have the income. You can't sell them a car. So you lose some opportunities there for sure. But, you know, overall, I think it doesn't affect the big picture.
Who would you say are your strongest lenders right now? Who are you putting out the most paper on the street with?
Ally and Cap One, still. They're dead. One or the other. Usually one of them is my top lender.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't say it's too surprising. I mean, obviously, you know, very powerful lenders in this industry. Tell me more about on your inventory acquisition side. What do you do with the inventory you wholesale? Where do you wholesale that?
Mostly ACV, actually. Some Manheim Express do, but I say, you know, mostly ACV. I don't want to send cars to the lane, transport them and bring them back. ACV and Manheim Express make it easy. They come, they do their condition report. You can sell it, not sell it. They charge reasonable fees as opposed to the lane. It works for the most part.
And how do you choose at your store? How do you decide what you're retailing versus wholesaling? Or just in general, how do you manage your inventory? Are you like a store where at 60 days you send it, shoot it to the auction? Or what's your method?
I don't have a hard cutoff day. I've never had one. The way I look at it is I don't want a certain percentage of my inventory, say 15% of my inventory shouldn't be more than 60 days old. But it doesn't mean I can't have one here that is 100 days old.
So what do you look at? I mean, are you looking at your equity in the vehicle relative to book value, your cost relative? Like, what are you looking at?
I want to retail it. My goal is to retail it because I can overcome front-end losses in most cases if I retail a car by selling a warranty, by getting finance, by adding a dog fee. I'm more likely to recover by retailing the car. So unless I can't retail it, I'm not going to wholesale it. I mean, if a car doesn't have any leads, nobody's looking at the car, then I know I can't retail it.
Okay, so let's talk about that, right? Speaking of leads, right? Because you're a low margin store, you work on volume. How are you marketing?
Like everyone else, really. Car Gurus, Auto Trader, Cars.com, True Cars, all the third party advertisers, we use them all. We also do Google, VLAs, SEM, paid searches. We do it all.
Tell me more about your expansion to Florida. Right? Was this like opportunistic for you, right? When you saw the off-lease property, or did you have a plan? Hey, I want to move into Florida.
I've always had an eye towards Florida. And when we sold the store in North Carolina, I became more serious about it. And, you know, when off-lease went out of business and had a feeling that these properties would surface. So I went after that. I actually went and looked at all of them. And, I picked this one because I felt it was the nicest property of them all, facility-wise. I've always heard about people putting up big numbers in Florida, you know, from off-lease to H. Greg and others, independent. So I figured if they can do it, maybe I can.
I mean, I don't blame you. I mean, obviously, Florida is a super booming market. Population has been growing like crazy. Competition has been growing as well.
It's not an easy market.
What's the hardest part?
For me right now, trying to figure it out because I'm new at it.
What specifically? I mean, do you have the team with you or are you hiring people? Like, where are you at right now?
Oh, I'm fully operational. We've hired almost 70 people in the last 30 days.
Wow. What roles?
Everything. You know, technicians, service managers, sales coordinates, finance, accounting, buyers, detail. The whole nine.
When you say accounting, are you operating, are you decentralized? Meaning, do you have anything that's strictly at North Carolina? Or are you operating in a way where each store has its own controller and stuff like that? How are you operating?
We are centralized in Raleigh, North Carolina for now, but you still have to have people on the ground at every store.
And how many people is your entire company total?
Close to 200.
What's your outlook for revenue? Like how many, you know, what do you think your revenue is going to be this year? How many units are you planning on selling?
Projecting about 600 cars a month combined.
So at 600 a month, you said roughly $30,000 average ticket. I mean, you're likely going to be doing over $200 million a year in sales.
Oh yeah, we'll exceed 200.
You know, if someone's listening to this, you know, small dealer, maybe doing a couple million in sales a year and has visions and aspirations of growing to being in a similar scale as you. I mean, what do you have to tell them, right? Like, what has been the most important lessons for you going from selling cars in the back of a service shop to doing over $200 million a year in sales?
There isn't any secret sauce, to be honest with you. But the most important aspect of our operation is managing the inventory. Because when you have $40 or $50 million worth of cars, you want to minimize your risk. And that's the most difficult part. And it's been quite difficult over the last few years, couple of years at least. But other than that, you know, everybody knows, you know, you got to maximize your PVR. You got to have volume. You got to recondition your car the right way. You can't overspend on advertising. You can't overspend on reconditioning, time to line. These are all important. I mean, it doesn't work unless it's all clicking together.
Yeah, it's the most complicated, simple business in the world, right? Like you said, it's just about the fundamentals.
I mean, you really, if you don't have the right reconditioning team, if you don't have the right, you know, F&I department, it doesn't work. It just doesn't. Everything has to work.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered going franchise?
I have, actually.
You're smiling. Do you have a contract right now? Are you under agreement?
There's something in the work I'm not at liberty to discuss right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, I think, you know, doesn't surprise me. I feel like you're at that scale where we typically see lots of independents starting to sniff around in the franchise world.
I never wanted to be a franchise dealer until I saw what happened in 2021 and I was jealous.
What are your biggest challenges right now specifically? If there's someone listening to this that can reach out to you, whether it be a potential sales manager, a lender, who knows what, right? What are some challenges, like real tactical challenges that you're facing?
Finding the right person at the right job is the most challenging part by far. It's people. It's always people. If you don't surround yourself by the right people, I mean, you'll never be successful. I'm not going to personally sell 607 cars a month. I can't do it. I have to have quality people around me from in every department. Otherwise, I think that's by far the most challenging part about it. And I'm going through it in Florida right now, and it's not easy. It's not easy.
How have you been acquiring talent? Where have you been finding people? Just traditional, you know, Indeed, LinkedIn, stuff like that? Or what are you doing?
I would say mostly that. In this store, we might have done a little bit different. We recruited some old employees from off-lease, and they put us in touch with some others, and that helped a little bit.
I love to hear it. So tell me more about your plans for the group. I mean, you just opened your third store. You were hinting potentially at a franchise some point down the line. Any other big plans for you?
It's not a solid plan, to be honest with you, but the idea is to potentially grow in the Florida market, Orlando maybe, and maybe other locations in Florida. But we're focused on the store right now, and we might also have a franchise play coming up, so we're not pursuing that right now.
So, selfish question, how did you come across Car Dealership Guy? I'm just totally curious, you know, or what platforms do you consume? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Actually, my controller told me about you the first time. She was like, do you follow the Car Dealership Guy on Instagram? And I said, nope, I've never heard of it. And she said, you need to, because I follow him and I don't know anything about the car business, but I find it interesting. So I started doing that same day.
I love it. On Instagram?
On Instagram. Actually, most of our staff follow you now. So, well, I encourage everybody to. You know, sometimes you post something about, you know, MSRP discount. And I'm like, well, I'm glad he did that because I don't want to go buy a 2023 used one that they just dropped price on.
Yeah, you get to see. I mean, you know what I call it? I called it the other day, like I'm trying to sort of create this, you know, the collective intelligence of the automotive industry. So with everyone sending me all this stuff all the time, it gives me this crazy opportunity to really filter, like make sense of it all and push it out to the world in real time. And so we share recall information before it's published. You see price drops in real time before it even gets to the auction, because you see it already happening on the retail sale. So that's actually really cool intel. Love to hear that.
It's definitely working for you. It's exploding, isn't it?
Trying my best. And I think the best part is the diversity of guests like on this platform. You know, you are a growing used car dealer. Suddenly next week I may have a multi-billion dollar franchise dealer followed by a vendor that's using AI to innovate the car. Like, there's so many different walks of life in the industry. And that's actually my favorite part, because I don't want to be, I talk about this all the time, but I don't want to just appeal to, you know, one sector versus the other. I really want to bring a well-rounded perspective to the industry. And so, you know, it keeps the conversations interesting.
You know, I would love for you guys to come visit us one day so we can show you in person what we do. It'd be fun, I think.
Well, we're going to be doing a lot more of that. We're planning a bunch of in-person, you know, activations, we call it. Now that, again, I'm out in the world, it's a lot easier to commit to these types of things. Actually, you just mentioned Orlando. I think we had an opportunity request down there. There was a couple others in Philadelphia where I'm based and all over the place. But long story short is we are going to be doing more in-person activations. And generally speaking, you should definitely expect to see us more out there in the wild in the next year.
Yeah, I'm very proud of this facility in Florida, and I would love to show it to you guys.
I love it, and I'd love to see it. You know, so before we wrap up, just tell me, you know, what's your outlook for the independent dealer? I mean, you've done a really good job at scaling your business. You know, you've clearly been very disciplined. I love your focus on the fundamentals. How do you feel about the state of the independent dealership over the coming years? How do you think about that?
The future is bright, in my opinion. Big scale independent dealers will be even more dominant in the future, in my estimation. You know, I feel like new car dealers will go back to selling new cars and they'll focus on that. And the small pops and shop stores are just not equipped. I think we have a bright future. I think we're here to stay. And, you know, EVs doesn't necessarily hurt us. I think they might even help.
Why do you say that?
Because you can sell a lot of used EVs, especially when you can get a rebate on them.
And lots of dealers have taken advantage of that. So time will tell how it all shakes out, but there's definitely opportunity. And I think it's easy to get drowned into like that negativity and like, oh, it's going to hurt this, it's going to hurt service. But you're right. Like there's always opportunity out there. That's the right outlook.
As long as there is demand and the economy stays resilient, we'll be fine, I think. Pending any major economical setbacks, I think the market will continue to thrive.
This was really, really great. I wish you lots of success with the new store. That's number one. Number two is we'll put your website and link in the show notes below. If anyone wants to reach out to you, reach out to the store, you know, is looking for an opportunity in Florida, they can reach out to you directly. And so we'd love to kind of pass on that information. Maybe soon enough, you'll give us a tour of your facility as well.
I'd love to. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Please give the podcast a rating, consider subscribing to the show, and check the show notes for links to what we talked about. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you guys next time.